Pennsylvania woman arrested for drunk driving falsely told police that her name was Hillary Clinton. Police initially believed her because, as we all know, no one in Pennsylvania has ever heard of Hillary Clinton. And officials are saying that since President Trump's election, there has been an increase in white supremacist activity on college campuses around the country. See? He told you he would create jobs. The Trump Report starts now!
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin!
Oh, that's right. It's probably my dumbest title and dumbest theme ever in the history of the Trump Report, but welcome! It is indeed the Trump Report. I'm Christian Black at Christian DMZ, joined, as almost always, by Chelsea Galicia at Chelsea Galicia.
That's
see, I timed
true.
It there for the pause in the song. Scott Moore at S-Man 80. And tonight, in studio, very special guest, very important person, my boss, Brant Pinvidic, at Brant Pinvidic. Not only are you of STX Entertainment, not only are you the award-winning films Why I'm Not on Facebook, Why I'm Not on Pokemon Go, you have a new podcast.
I do, just up today, basically.
And the premiere episode, I think, would be of huge interest to our friends out there in the audience of the Trump Report. Why I'm Not a Politician.
Why I'm Not a Politician.
That episode had, one. You covered the spectrum. You had Ben Shapiro.
Right.
You had Dennis Kucinich.
Left.
Wow.
That's way out there,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm. And then you had your pal Jack Berkman, who's a lobbyist.
A lobbyist. Number one lobbyist in the country.
And he explains.
How does one measure number one lobby? Like
cash.
Yeah, I think
he bills, brings in big money.
And there's an official record of that?
Well, I mean, he knows.
It's all public. That's the craziest thing. Like, they do things out in the public that people see, and, like, really no one
right.
really cares.
This is why I say that there's a legalized system of corruption in this country.
Oh, 100%.
Right? Oh, yes, and by the way, Jack, in the episode, will explain. Absolutely.
Exactly.
It's a broken system.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I think,
I can't wait to hear
everything he tells you is just like everything you're afraid of being true, and it's worse than you think it is.
Especially the way he says it.
Yeah.
Because it's just like, come on.
He's a registered lobbyist.
Because he says, because he says it with a smile.
He says it with a smile.
And so
and he sleeps okay at night?
Oh.
No problem whatsoever. By the way,
wow.
He lobbied for Donald Trump. He also lobbied for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Yeah.
And
so,
that's just normal.
Yeah, absolutely.
Cause yeah, exactly.
Because they don't care.
That's not that.
Right, they don't. They're like, it's
just
the money.
Planned Parenthood,
exactly.
The NRA.
Yeah.
Two of his clients.
So the Why I'm Not podcast can be found at whyimnot.com.
Whyimnot.com.
And it's also done from these very studios over here at AfterBuzz TV. So,
indeed.
Brant, thank you for joining us. Let's start off sort of on not the biggest story, but I feel like I should explain the goofy title and the reason why I went with Hot for Teacher. Mm-hmm. The French election, which is where we left everything last week. Apparently, every once in a while, polling can work and actually give you an accurate indication of where things are headed. And also, once again, the French just happy to show everyone, like, no, we don't
really
do that.
Are better.
We don't do
we
that
are.
Sort of thing.
Exactly.
Fuck
yes.
You.
Hey, we called it last week, though. We said he was going to win. Still.
Well, I hedged my bets, and I said he would lose because I wanted to be the, But now it's like, I just wanted to be that person. But so, Macron, which is how you have to say it.
Macron.
You cannot say Macron.
You can't say macaroon.
You can't definitely not say macaroon.
Not French.
Not macaroon.
Right, I know.
Macaroon et fromage. Not macaroni and cheese. No. And the reason why we have that song, his wife, I learned, was his high school teacher.
Mm-hmm. Love, not really.
No. Love that's stories
a,
like
that's
that.
A stretch.
Right.
Really.
But
he was
25
15,
years old.
25 years old.
24.
Okay.
24. Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
so
I'm
you're defending this.
I
now what if he was a young woman and this was a male?
That's what I'm
we
saying.
Have that
exactly.
Exact same situation.
Right. That's what I'm
saying. Melania
totally
is 24 years younger than Trump.
Was he her teacher? Did he teach her? Has
no.
she learned anything
it's
from him?
It's a big difference.
No, but there is a double standard there.
Whoa,
if
of course
you,
there is.
No,
why?
Because if you flipped it around and it was a woman that was 24
years
old, that was 15-year-old girl, that the high school student was a man.
Yes.
That's what I just said.
Yeah, but I'm saying it would be a huge issue.
And they say it is their secret about when their relationship began.
Well, it's a secret because
we
know.
But by the way, in France, it's like, oh, that's nothing.
That is nothing.
I have fucked all of my teachers. You know, so it's not really
good. But if it was flipped, it would be a bigger deal. It would
be
a scandal.
We would never know about it because he would not be running.
No, exactly. That's what I'm saying. That would
be the
true.
End of him
it
right
would
there.
Be, yeah.
So he
just like Obama, if he was like Trump and had three wives from two foreign women and multiple kids, he would never have gotten that far either.
But Obama, he's a one-woman man. All right, so Scott, your thoughts on this. What does this say about the bigger picture, the world picture? It is, let's be honest, it's just France. So, you know, that does, it's not like, it, you know,
well,
it's not China. You know, no, it's not like just, one of the biggest players in the world.
Well, but it still is.
It's significant because it's
top 10 economies of the world, and also it affects the EU's future. And actually, the win, believe it or not, is bigger than any U.S. presidential win if you were to take out percentage wise.
Well, they did
it's like
say
a state,
that
they,
the turnout
win.
Was like 65%.
75%.
See, early in the day,
well,
I heard 65.
How did we got 65, 70,
75.
But
and
then,
so let's just
but either
let's
way,
just
it's
go,
very high.
Yeah, even if you go with the low, mm-hmm. 65.
Ours was like 46.
Yeah, our good turnouts are like 51, and right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So, and they have an actual national day that is about elections.
Well, they really are better than us.
They are because they had to vote. And
their democracy seems to work
2 weeks later, which can you imagine if we had to then go back and do a runoff 2 weeks later after voting?
No one would go.
And go back 2 weeks and vote and have that kind of high turnout.
But they also close their stores in the middle of the day for 3 hours to have lunch.
Well, of course. They're way better than we are.
They're a different culture.
Bran, you've done a lot of business around the world. Have you dealt with the French much?
Lots.
And do you feel like this is not a surprise that this is the way they went?
No. Not at all.
They were not going to go with Le Pen.
No, I think it would be too much work for them.
And that's not what they're about.
They're not about that.
Yeah.
They are about lifestyle.
Exactly.
And relaxing and easy things.
That's my lifestyle right there, too.
I mean, I wish
it sounds like me.
Lifestyle.
No, it sounds like what I like
so
my life.
Chelsea, obviously, I'm downplaying it a little bit because I saw the perfect tweet for this that France surrenders to Macron because, of course, France, known throughout history, for surrendering, but apart from that, too soon.
Yes,
too soon. All right, fair enough. The comedian A. Whitney Brown said that this is a country that arguably lost a war with Greenpeace. So obviously, I knew Brent would like that one. So as we look at this, Chelsea, you know, this is significant.
I think it's significant for what happens when you have a lot of voter participation.
You mean not 40, what was it, 47%? Is that what you said?
That we had?
Yeah, that we had in November.
Something like that, yeah.
So having that many more people come out, it apparently makes a difference.
Slightly.
Okay.
And I think that we should take note of that.
Yeah, well, we vote. Brandon, you're allowed to vote here, right?
I am not allowed to vote.
You're not allowed to vote because you're not. But you're getting. You're in the process of getting.
I am in the process of getting my citizenship. I'm very excited about that, but it'll be a few years still.
And okay. I just saw an article.
When Trump runs for re-election, you'll
be
able to.
Right, ready.
If he's still around.
Okay. Well, then
I'm
he can
still hedging my bets.
He can always vote for Pence. Anyway, I'm sorry. What were you
this article that I saw today said that in Wisconsin, the voter ID laws had suppressed about 200,000 or 300,000 people.
That's a lot.
And
what?
And he only won Wisconsin by 22,000 votes.
So you mean there are 200,000 or 300,000 people in Wisconsin that don't have IDs?
Turn away?
No, here's the thing. Is if your ID expires, if you move, if something, sometimes a name gets, I mean, it is actually very difficult in some states to get IDs because there's been an effort in many states, the red states, to make it harder to vote. And getting IDs is not as easy as you'd think it would be.
I mean,
right, especially if you live far away from a place and you live 50, 100 miles away.
And
you get someone
their
to drive
DMVs
you.
Are only open during business hours when people,
so people
are working. It costs
or they're
money.
They're far away. They're not
all the DMVs
are
only open during business hours. When
well,
people
no,
are
I
working.
Think in California they're open like one Saturday a they month are. Or something. So, yeah. But I understand your point that you know it's not easy for most people to get.
I take
IDs,
time off work, or also
I just think it's
somewhere.
Sort of like it's so. It feels very condescending to be like, this is a group of people that can't get IDs.
Well,
like,
but now we know that 200 or 300,000 people that have voted before did not.
Well, right. I need to ask an important question, Chelsea. Where'd you read this article? Was it Occupy Democrats? Was it Huffington Post? Or was it?
Salon.
Was it somewhere reputable? Because, you know, if we don't trust Breitbart,
I read it too. But the point is, we should be making it easier for people to get IDs.
I agree
and be
with
able
that.
To get to be able to vote, not the other way around. So that's the problem, is that it has been restricted and it has been made more difficult in certain states to be able to go out and vote and to be able just to be able to get an ID. Because like you're saying, sometimes it's hard if you have to get a birth certificate or other things and you weren't born in the state that you live in or places like
or
Texas
if you were,
where
or I don't know, if you were born in Kenya,
away,
just, right. You know, just putting it out there, not talking about
Bazinga.
Anyone.
Exactly. And if you're several, you know, 100 miles away, like in Texas, and you live in the middle of nowhere, it's not easy for you to get to the local DMV. The nearest one could be 1,500 miles away.
But it's also not easy to rent a place to live or get a phone bill or anything in the world with an ID. I just don't know. I don't know people that don't really have IDs.
Well,
a few people, yeah, I think it's a thing, but
like... But that's sort of like
When I lived in New York, I knew more people because they didn't have driver's licenses because they didn't need to drive.
That's what I was going to say. And people don't drive.
You don't need to do anything.
You don't need any, exactly.
They live with some family members that have the IDs and they're not actually the ones that are on the lease because they're their mom or dad or somebody.
If you work on a film production based in New York, everybody in the crew shows up, they have passports. Nobody has a
driver's
license.
But even that's kind of a thing that a lot of people don't have.
But anyway, passports really as fun as this was to talk about, we should talk about the big news today. James Comey. Oh, did you find where your article was? Yeah,
I'm looking it up on Snopes. Did an analysis
of
whether
Snopes. I think some people find Snopes to be biased, but I think that they're fairly even keel. But someone in the chat, oh, Josh, if we could put the chat up so we can see our friends that are joining us.
It says, quote, "More, even if the 300,000 figure was an accurate estimate of Wisconsin residents who back in 2014 possibly could not vote because they did not have the correct identification, the number was not a headcount of residents who actually did or would have set out to vote." So they don't exactly know.
Not 200,000 people got turned away from the polls, but there is the potential for that. Okay.
Where it looks like perhaps around 300,000 people voted in 2014 that did not vote this time.
Part of the story, just like James Comey was an interesting part of the election story, but I think a lot of people would say that it is not the reason that Hillary Clinton lost. It was a contributing factor. But here's the thing that we found out about James Comey today. You know, if you agree with the point that his comments about Hillary Clinton's emails influenced the election, then Trump clearly says, "Thank you so much for helping me become president. You're fired." That's it. That's all he needed out of him. And let's talk a little about some of the reasons why Trump had to fire him. It's funny because I was like talking to my wife and she was like, "Wait, why did he get fired?" And I was like, "Oh, he said, you know, some wildly inaccurate things about Hillary Clinton's emails and how many he had sent she had sent to Huma Abedin, who then forwarded them on to Anthony Weiner." And she's like, "But didn't that help him?" And I'm like, "Well, sure, but it's still a guy who's clearly not that good at his job." Chelsea, I'll start with you. Your thoughts when you hear about James Comey being fired earlier today?
I mean, does anybody not believe that it has something to do with the Russia investigation?
Exactly.
He's fired everybody that's come out to say that he's investigating. Although in the letter, Trump said, "Although I appreciate you telling me on three separate occasions that I was not under investigation, I still, you know, agree with the recommendations by Sessions and Rod Rosenstein, was it, to fire you so you're done, effective immediately."
All right.
I don't believe it's anything but the Russia story.
I mean, it is also a guy who clearly wasn't great at his job. So,
like, he cares about people being great at their job.
Haven't you seen? I mean, he fired Gene Simmons and Dennis Rodman.
It has
clearly
nothing,
he cares about how people
it
perform.
It has nothing to do with Hillary Clinton's emails and everything to do with him and the investigation. Says the man, Jeff Sessions, who had to recuse himself from the Russia investigation, that he should be fired. He was going to go do a testimony on Thursday this week on Russia. It's way too convenient. There's definitely more to this, and now he can install his own puppet that he can hope will not be doing the FBI investigation on Russia. And if he thinks the Russia investigation is going to go away, it's only going to make it worse. It makes him look more guilty by doing this. If he was really concerned about the emails and everything, he would have fired him when he came in office in January. Shady, shady, shady. There's no nothing about Hillary Clinton's emails there that has anything to do with it.
The demon knot in the chat says Trump just wanted an excuse to fire him. This is laughable. It has nothing to do with Clinton.
Absolutely.
But what were you
going
to say, Chelsea?
That's a good question. What was I going to say? Because at this point, I don't remember.
I went to the chat. Brant, you hear all this.
I would say don't take the bait because this has nothing to do with the Russian thing. Firing James Comey is not going to take the heat off the Russian thing if there is heat.
No, it's going to make it worse.
It's not going to make it worse either. Yeah. It is what it is. The investigation is where it's at. They don't have evidence of collusion yet. They got a lot of bullshit that's going on. Nothing's going to come out of it.
I totally disagree.
But what's happening is people are going to get all hyped up about it, and they're going to start overstating the case against it, and it does the same thing that helps Trump. All the time is that when everything's overstated about what's happening, it detracts from what really
is. But that's why he's doing this as a distraction, because if he really cared about anything to do with Hillary Clinton's emails, he would. It has nothing to do with why he would have fired him today.
Anything to do with like, ooh, I can save myself from this Russian investigation. Let me get rid of the head of the FBI.
I do, because if he installs a person that's going to be supportive of him that he hired, they're going to be more likely to kind of turn the other way when it comes to the investigation. Absolutely.
Well, as you said, a puppet. Absolutely. So everyone in the chat, let us know what puppet you would like him to hire.
Everybody
I'm gonna
knows
say
it's going to be Jared Kushner.
No, I'm with Kermit. So I want everybody to suggest
no,
a puppet.
Absolutely.
Now,
Rudy Giuliani.
Before we
yeah,
let
exactly. That's what
Chelsea forget again, what was the point you were going to make earlier?
Well, there are already members of the Republicans saying that there should be a special prosecutor or a special committee appointed to investigate this, including McCain and a member of the House Freedom Caucus, which I found surprising.
So
it's not just Democrats. There are Republicans.
No, no, Republicans morning, have to run for re-election too. So clearly.
I think by morning there will be double-digit number of Republicans who are calling for an independent
prosecutor. And our friend Drexel did a little drive-by before we started, and he said that subpoenas are dropping.
Yeah.
So let's actually talk about this ongoing Russian investigation. We got the news earlier in the week, I think it was yesterday, that President Obama personally warned President Trump about Flynn and was like, yeah, this is probably not a good idea.
Yeah, but Sean Spicer was like, we just think that President Obama was bitter because Flynn didn't like Hillary. He was mean to Hillary, kept chanting, lock her up, and that's why Barack Obama was not speaking very nicely about Flynn. And that if Obama had really been concerned about Flynn, that he would have revoked his security clearance. And since he didn't do that, then Obama couldn't have been really that concerned. So it's all Obama's
fault.
Well,
and Sean Spicer also says, you should discount everything that Sally Yates says because she was a Hillary supporter. So we'll go back to the hearings, but I want to ask Brant. We've had a few months now of Sean Spicer. As you watch this guy, as somebody who you know deals with people, and you try to sell things to people every day in terms of the television production business that you're in. How do you think he's doing at selling the Trump administration to the American people?
I don't think he's doing a great job because he comes across like a used car salesman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and I think that the way Trump was able to garner the support he did was he went against that style. And that style of politics turns people off in a huge way. It turns them off to a level that they voted for that guy on the wall. And like that's the point. It's like it's really not about him. It's really about the attitude and the feeling of the electorate that they would be like, I'm going to vote for that guy. He's like the Molotov cocktail you throw in that's civilized. This is a civilized riot is what it was. It's like, I'm not going to go break shit and I'm not going to smash windows, but I'm going to put that guy in power. So you get an idea of how pissed off I am with the way things go.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so it's like Spicer gets out there and he doesn't speak the way that Trump sort of lays things out there. And he speaks like a politician trying to cover things and make things feel nice. And it's like, you don't need to do that. Just say it the way Trump would say it and people will get mad and people will like it. And just he's doing a disservice by trying to like sugarcoat everything and double talk around it. And there's just no need for that. You either buy into what's going on or you don't.
And he always seems to say these things that are so incredibly implausible. You know, it's like obviously the White House press secretary is obviously there sort of as kind of the first line of defense against the president. You're going to obviously fudge some numbers. But it's just, he's a used car salesman, but his lot doesn't have any cars. He's selling you cars that actually you can't drive away in. And he's still got his job. So I have to give him that.
He doesn't need to do that because the people that know what's going on, they know the type of cars that they're getting. They're fine with that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. Is like he's not convincing anybody. He's not swaying any votes. He's not swaying anybody's opinion. So it's like, what's the point? You're talking to a room that has no interest in hearing each other's sides. Nobody's changing their mind about anything after listening to Sean Spicer talk. So why bother trying to double talk around it and making his own stock go down? It's just, you know, after what you watched it, the right and the left are so unbelievably polarized that there's no point discussing this stuff because we're not arguing in rational terms. We're arguing wildly emotional, and we just want the facts
to go to our
things. No.
Well, you guys are rational, but I think that there's a lot of irrationality. To what you said earlier, I think people voting for Trump, a lot of them, were voting for an idea that was, like you said, it's a Molotov cocktail. It's like, not only is this not Hillary, but this is like not business
as
usual.
Right,
I'm
that's what I felt like. It was
other,
like the FU kind of candidate that's going to shake her
I mean, to an extent, it's really a lot like Californians voting for Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's like, this is how little I care about the way politics are done.
But
I'm going to vote for the Terminator.
But the thing I will say that I do feel like Sean Spicer fits the Trump thing is that he, to me, doesn't come across very polished as a press secretary normally does. To me, I feel like a press secretary is going to come up, and at least when they're double speaking, they're going to smooth it out. but he'll just blatantly say things. He'll say incorrect things. He'll talk about Hitler and the he's just not very.
He got a much better
good speaker.
Job.
He blatantly lies where it's obvious.
Reince Priebus would have been perfect for that job. So he got a much better job. But when he was ahead of the head of the RNC, I mean, he was basically out there to eat shit every day because Obama was king of the castle, and they had both houses at that point, and he was just out there every day selling, you know. So he really got a better job, but that would have been the perfect job.
Yeah, because I do feel
I've heard him do that.
He fits that Trump-esque kind of unpolished sort of just, you know, he doesn't come across as some of the press secretaries even in the past, even around the Bush administration, and that were always very smooth speaking, and he feels a lot more combative with the press. So to me, he fits that sort of Trump motif. But yeah, and on what you were saying too, I think he also tries too hard, and it just comes across
really bad in a good way.
No, it comes across horrible, and I'm surprised he still does his job.
If you're going to be combative with the press, you have to do it in a superior way. Mm-hmm. Because the press is asking stupid questions, leading questions where they already know the answer that you don't need to answer.
Or they know you're not going to answer
it. Yeah, so it's just like, instead of just being dismissive and combative in a sense, like, hey, come back when you have a real question.
Yeah.
It's more like, meh, 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 you know.
I still feel like that's the one part of the job that Trump really, really likes, is like when he has the 1 hour where he takes questions and, you know, they ask all these dumb things and he's like, you know, he's like, I don't need to answer that question. Yeah. And so maybe Trump needs to be his own own spokesman, own press secretary. Yeah, he has time. Why not? Chelsea, I want to move back sort of to the hearings on Russia. Sally Yates, whom we talked a lot about. Ted Cruz really went after her, and he did a great job in letting her prove her point and show everyone, I guess she was right, even though she was from the Republican point
hailed
of view.
As a shiro and deserving of
but
that.
But even though she was considered to be like a partisan hack by Republicans, it didn't mean she couldn't be right. You know, just because you didn't like where she came from, maybe she had good advice. And I guess Ted Cruz sort of went at it probably the wrong way.
I mean, he tried to. He stated,
but his dad killed Cuba. I mean, sorry, his dad killed Castro. So obviously, you know.
I mean, she just shot him down with her knowledge of the law. He tried to rattle off the language, and she was like, well, actually, there's something that comes right after that that says X, Y, and Z, and this is why there's a question of law here. So she just did it brilliantly. I think the other highlight of that was when she was asked, why did you feel that you should be able to override the president's executive order on the Muslim ban? That's not your job. And she said, well, actually, I remember when you confirmed me, sir, you asked me if I was willing to stand up to the president if I saw the president do something that was unconstitutional. And in this situation, I thought that the president was doing something unconstitutional. And so I stood up to him and that order the way that I promised you and your colleagues I would.
Well,
and she was acting attorney general at the time. Right. So she would have technically
and again,
had that power,
you know, she just uses more facts and says, well, you know, if what I said and did was so bad, then why did these courts all uphold it and why did the White House eventually withdraw it? So, again, showing she was right. So then the real question now is, what's next for Sally Yates? Senator, multi-million dollar lecturer, MSNBC host.
Governor of Georgia.
Yeah.
Well, there you
she,
go.
She, I mean, yeah.
Lobbyist.
Or lobbyist.
Boo.
Yeah, well, you know,
come
she,
on.
She wants the money.
She's better than that.
But I will say,
yes, I say so. How do you know that?
Because none of them are better than that. That is what they do. That's the business they're in. That's what they do for livings. They just roll around between the different parties and talk with each other and have lunches and dinners and raise money. And that's it. That's their world.
I don't agree that
is a blanket statement. Right. I agree I think that it's very many
common.
Of them.
But I think it's more commonly think that Republicans and Democrats are working behind the scenes and like, oh, we know Trump's a fuck up or whatever, and let's do this and that. Like, but I do think Sally Yates, just to go back, being a political hack, I think that was more Ted Cruz that was proven that yesterday.
She's
worked under both administrations, George H.W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George W. Bush.
She's been
Obama.
In that office
she's been
for
around
27
there for years.
Years.
Exactly. So
if
she's
she
seen
wanted
both sides
to sell out and become a lobbyist, she could have done that years ago.
But now her asking price can be a lot more.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Money talks, and that's
so
a disappointing
thing. So she held out for 27 years because she knew this was going to happen.
No, she did. She had a great gig for 27 years. Yeah. She doesn't have a great gig anymore. Now it's like, what's going to pay me a ton of money? They all, it's the same, anybody would do it. anybody would do exactly what they are what they all
well,
do.
I would think it'd be money,
wave
the
check.
Not everybody, but sure, plenty do.
Plenty do, yeah.
But I still have faith in a few people.
But, you know, her name's out there right now. She has a lot more recognition.
She does.
Brent, if...
There's a book coming.
If yeah,
for sure.
That's okay. Good people write books.
If she contacted you, she's like, you know, I'd really like to have an unscripted show produced. Yeah, I
don't even hesitate.
Yeah, I didn't even get to ask the question because I knew the answer.
And that show could be good. It could be helpful, and it could do good for our society.
Right.
So not everything that leads to making money is a corrupt thing, but I don't believe. But so here's the thing. I think that you can still be a decent, moral citizen, civil servant, public servant, and make money in ethical ways. And going above just legal ways like lobbying, but still what many of us would be to believe is ethical and moral. A TV show may be along those lines, and it may not be, depending if the way that it's used. And I think that 90% of the time, you're probably right about the revolving door. And there are some people like me on Team Bernie that really want to close that revolving door and want to end the influence of money in our politics. So I largely agree with you, but I'm going to hold out for. That is not everybody.
I want to get to a comment in the chat before it goes away, and we'll get to you in a second, Scott. So Mike Bronx says, funny how men automatically assume that women in politics will readily turn corrupt. No, I assume that everyone in politics will readily turn corrupt,
given
the opportunity.
I'd actually go the other way around.
That men are far more likely.
Way more likely.
Yeah.
Women my natural conscience. Instinct, that's what I would say.
Yeah. Sorry, Scott.
No, I like women better.
No, I was just going to say that.
Agreed.
I do think that there are, even Republicans, I think there are certain... that are not all about the money and do want to make a difference.
I think, of course, they start out that way.
And some of the smaller...
But even if you're not powers. About the money, you can't be in politics unless you're about the money. There is no version of getting anywhere without raising millions
of dollars.
This is true, and that's
terrible, and that's one of the things that I really dislike about the way our government functions right now.
Right.
And there are
a wing
of people, the progressives, who are trying to get that money element taken out by campaign finance laws that help, you know, publicly financed elections and things of that nature that would reduce, if not completely destroy, that system.
Well, we're not close to almost out of time yet, but because we always run out of time, I think we should probably move to one of the other big conversations, which, of course, is healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Just last week on this very show, I think we all said, well, no, of course they're not going to vote for it. They don't have the votes. It's political suicide.
I didn't think they had the votes the morning they did.
I think that it still was political suicide for some people, and apparently they squeezed out some votes. Scott, as you sort of heard that happened, one, how surprised were you that you heard that they were going to get enough votes? And what do you think had to happen? Not what we know about, but behind the scenes, what sort of things do you think had to have happened?
Freedom Caucus got to kill people.
I mean, it was only...
They're murderers now?
I mean, completely. I mean, because...
That's totally rational.
But the
Freedom Caucus would say, oh, you mean like Planned Parenthood? But anyway, you go ahead.
Planned Parenthood.
I'm just saying what the Freedom Caucus would say, not what I would say. I'm not, you know, they're not here.
But the reason that the Freedom Caucus did not go along with Trump 1.0 was because it still provided too many people with coverage. They wanted to take that away in the name of freedom.
Okay, so that's the part where people are dying. Not literally they get to shoot people.
I mean, people will, people will die, much to the surprise of what's his name, Raul Labrador. And I was like, oh my God, the dog Labrador is smarter than this guy, when he said that people don't die from lack of access to health care.
He apologized for that.
Oh,
he
I didn't hear
back.
That. Okay.
He said, well, he didn't really apologize. He said, I misspoke.
What did he mean?
It was one of those ones where, well, what he meant was that, you know, people don't get turned away at the emergency room.
I mean, this
is
I saw some kind of 60 minutes.
So now everyone else, taxpayers will now pay for that too, besides them being bankrupt. So that works really great now.
On like a 60 minutes type show, I saw where an insurance employee whose job it was to either admit or deny benefits was told by her bosses that when you deny coverage for a procedure, you're not killing people. You're just saying no to the treatment.
Well, yeah, because they don't die that instant that you turn down the procedure. Scott, you were going to make a point before.
Well, no, I was just going to say that it was so razor thin, 217 to 213. But I think part of it was is that they realized it's sort of not their problem. Now it goes to the Senate, and now the Senate is the one that has to do the heavy legwork and lifting, I mean, to actually change it.
Let's be honest. The Senate is not in the habit of passing pretty much anything.
Right, so that's what I'm saying. So they felt less – feel like they felt less pressure because they knew it was not going to go and be this exact bill when it finally
got to the President. But the House Freedom Caucus thinks if they change one word –
But they were so happy that they were able to have a big white guy party. Josh, if you could put up the graphic. This is not them spraying each other with Miller Lights like the St. Louis Cardinals winning the World Series, but it's pretty close to it. And look at all the minorities not in that picture. There's a couple of women's.
Three. Women I can count three.
But, you know, it's not so much about that, but it's let's talk about bad optics. It just looks bad. You guys are celebrating, and I mean guys because it's almost all guys.
Right.
You're there celebrating, and you know, Brent, you see that picture. I don't know, you might have to flip around just to see
yes,
it.
I know the picture.
Yeah. And you look at that, it's like, well, that's not good branding, you know? I mean, if they want to put forth the Republican Party, the Trump administration, as being in touch with the American people, this is probably not the picture that you need to have in all the ads that are going to be running all year next year, right? I mean, they probably should have, you know, gotten a couple of people, they filled it in a little bit, the crowd.
I mean, I'm not a big fan of branding diversity for optics. I don't think that's...
But you understand that it, of course,
I understand
is
that it should be branded diversity because that's what helped make the right representation for the nation. But I don't like the idea of people being like, you should have, you know, thrown people in there as the token... sort of so we can say we're diverse. It's like, you are or you aren't.
No, of course they shouldn't have, but aren't you surprised that they didn't?
The whole atmosphere for that is a little... Well, it's also a little premature, too.
And they'll, you know, basically, I'm sure they've already started cutting commercials that are like, they celebrated when they voted that you would die, you know?
And to say that people are going to die is not a dramatic overstatement. It is the reality.
Well, I mean, to say that on its own, yes, that's not a dramatic... People will die. But I don't think people are going to die specifically from this healthcare thing is borderline hysterical.
Well, the thing that passed in the House isn't going to kill anyone because it's not law.
If it does pass, if it becomes law,
in this present form,
people who currently have coverage and who would get treatment for some catastrophic illness will no longer be able to get that.
And what happened to those people before Obamacare kicked in?
They died.
Right.
They just died.
Yes.
Yeah, so now they should go back and just die? That's the whole point.
Well,
aren't we supposed
really
to make
not
health
factual.
Insurance better? No, yeah, it is factual.
We have not made health insurance better.
Right, and we're not.
Health insurance is worse.
But we're not making
it
better.
And it's getting worse.
With this
the health insurance is not better,
not
but health care access
yes.
has improved by 20
Absolutely.
Million.
Well, one of the
I don't
main,
agree
this
with
is
that.
One of the
it
main
is.
Topics
the,
I wanted
California's
to...
health insurance rate, uninsured rate, is the lowest it's ever been now, and that's partly because of the expansion of Medicaid with Covered California.
And listen,
that's
I'm
an
sure
absolute
there are,
fact.
There are a few people that it benefits, but almost everybody I talk to hates it.
Because it's
more than
expensive.
Anything in the world.
I like
sure.
it.
And it's
less,
also you can't find people, you can't get
because I've talked about on the show how I have Covered California, and it just went up like $125.
Yeah,
so
and part
so
of the
I
problem,
like it a lot less than
well,
I did
no,
last
because
month.
Here's part of the problem, because, again, Republicans were never able to fund it and support it. If they were to support it and if they were to actually make it better instead of tearing it up and making it worse, this new health
there is no better version of it. That's what
yes
that's the
well,
myth.
You can make it better. Their plan that they have is worse.
So
their
this
plan
is where
that
the part where you
worse.
Tell us about
it's
Canada.
Well, that's
their
what I
think.
Thank you for setting it up, Chelsea, because one of the things that I really
their
wanted to talk
worse.
About with Brant when I knew he was going to be on, and obviously healthcare was in the news, is Brant is a Canadian.
I am.
It is the less dirty C word, Canadian. Having you here on the show, we're very excited. So obviously a lot of times it's pointed to, well, you know, they have it up in Canada.
Right.
And of course, the first argument against that is how many people, just general, are there in Canada?
Like 30 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, less
so
than
it's
California.
Like, yeah, less than the state of California. Mm-hmm. So their
and
system is not going to be something that you can go ahead
and
apply.
And we have massive resources, more land mass.
But talk a little bit about your personal experiences because...
So, I've had a baby in Canada. I've had a baby in the United States. And all I can tell you is being in the hospital, having a baby in Canada, and I've been through major medical procedures in Canada, it's like going to the DMV.
Mm-hmm.
If you think that's good or great, going your experience at the DMV and that type of thing, then you might be okay with it. But it's just not – it's not functional. It's worse healthcare for everyone because the government's involved in it. And the fact is like – the second government touches something and gets bigger, which is what they do. That's what they do. That's what government does. It tries to get more and more things so they can raise more money. It just gets worse. And healthcare is super complicated because there's 300 and some odd million people here. And so once you try to sort of get involved and fix everything, it's just like trying to plug the holes in the dike. It just floods everywhere. And that's where we're sort of at now, which is like, you can't leave people without health care, but health care isn't free. So who do you get to pay for it? You have
all pay for it.
But the problem is you have a free system here. So in Canada,
how do you mean a free system here?
Meaning the doctors who are really good can say, go fuck yourself. I'm not taking your Obamacare. And then who can you go see? You can't go see those doctors. So then all those people who got Obamacare now can't go see the good doctors because the doctors don't need to see you.
Hold on
a second. In Canada, it doesn't work like that.
Because the insurance companies don't reimburse those doctors, so those doctors then therefore can't take those patients.
Right. Well, where is insurance companies get the money to reimburse them?
I mean, we're paying premiums. So that's why the idea of either getting rid of the insurance companies or overhauling the insurance companies so that they cannot be for profit, there are some insurance companies that are already not for profit. But here's the thing. It's the cost of medical care is going up in large part because Americans are unhealthy. Unhealthy by lifestyle choice.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So if we
sing it, sister.
If we clean up healthcare, the only way to really do it to bring down prices is we have to have preventative care in the form of education. And I don't know, but perhaps maybe tax on excess sugar and
that didn't work so well when Mike Bloomberg tried to do it in New York.
You know,
but I think taxing is a step too far. But the idea that education, you know, maybe putting, you know, look, the attempt to reform school lunches is a great idea. I think that what Michelle Obama did turned into lunches the kids wouldn't eat.
Well,
that's too far.
But
somewhere in between that, I think that's where you have to do it, though. You have to do it. It's not this generation. You're not going to make any health for you.
Here's the easiest example to look at.
Yes.
How is it possible that LASIK surgery, laser eye surgery, one of the most technical surgeries that mankind has ever come up with, somebody putting a laser inside your eye and reshaping your cornea, like that is crazy technology and difficult. How is it possible that it is so ridiculously cheap? You can go get it done for $1,200.
Yeah, I've had it done.
That's right. It's because it's not part of the government insurance system. So the LASIK centers had to go like, oh shit, we have to still make a living. So you know what we got to do? We got to make our waiting rooms nice. We got to take care of people. We can't cancel patients. And we got to lower costs and increase competition because system works.
But you can't do that with cancer treatment.
Well, there are lots of areas that you can work on that side to incentivize those companies to do it in a real way. You know, my wife went through an entire medical procedure and we are on only a catastrophic medical insurance because we're very healthy. So a lot of the stuff...
You have that here in the United States?
Yes, where it's only catastrophic.
And I wanted that, but I don't... How do you...
We got grandfathered in. We got grandfathered in where it was only catastrophic. But when Obamacare, now we're not allowed.
Before that, yes, before, because I had my own plan. I worked for myself. It was very, very minimal.
Yes, and it was brilliant because I don't go to the doctor very much. And I'm okay spending $150 to go to the doctor once a year.
The problem is then that, you know, it was devastating on families that got sick and couldn't afford it. Listen, my mom got cancer when she was 42 and 43. And her treatment for both those times cost hundreds of thousands of dollars. If there was no insurance, she could have afforded it, but other people would have died, gone bankrupt, ruined their families. I mean, there's just major consequences for not having insurance or some kind of coverage. I'm willing to pay a little bit more. I don't like to pay $300 a month. That's a bit much, but I'm willing to pay a little bit more for the greater good.
Will you pay $800 a month?
I don't want to pay $300.
You're going
to
end up paying $1,200.
Under the Obamacare repeal replace plan, this TrumpCare 2.0, you're probably right about that.
It's going to go much higher.
But I would like if the same way that my car insurance is in part determined by my driving history, my tickets, and the fact that I've not had any DUIs and all that kind of stuff, that comes down.
But
I would
also
like to
protects
be,
you for people
it
that
does,
don't have
it's a thing.
That
you,
helps you
you're
for
trying
other
to
people.
Have it both ways. You want to have, hey, I'm healthy, I shouldn't have to pay a health insurance.
But I still pay more than I should for my car insurance, and I'm willing to do that.
Because you're also paying for people that don't, you know, don't drive properly and have the same, you know, insurance, because now you're paying for them.
But the bigger problem is
that they
don't. Does
it bother you that the pay of the CEOs of these insurance companies, like if that money, that $50 million for one of them that I recently read, if that money wasn't going to one person that ran that insurance company, you think that the price of healthcare could come down?
No, because who's going to run the insurance company? The guys who
the CEO can't make a couple million. He's got to make 50 million.
He'll go get a job where he can make that money. That's what the real world is
but
out there.
But that's why
they make so much money. Men and women that are CEOs of these huge public companies.
Right, but that
make
but
that kind of money
that's
because
part
they
of
keep
the
those
problem
things up.
With healthcare. And I agree with you about Canada's with you know I do agree that some of the government healthcare. I have a friend who's a doctor, and she actually is now in New Zealand, and had said you know the it doesn't always work because you know people get on waiting lists for surgeries and certain things.
How's so the VA doing?
So I get there needs to be a balance. However, the problem is it's out of control with health insurance companies.
Wild
it's out of control with prescription coverage.
Yep.
It's out of control with this being a
big
profit business
big, that's
to
a,
deny people
problem.
Coverage, deny yes. people coverage, deny
the
people
problem
coverage.
The problem is you don't
profit,
know
profit,
what
profit.
Your procedures cost. You think because you have health insurance, it's okay for an MRI to cost $3,000 or to have a bandage that you have to get on
right.
your
right.
finger
which
that costs
$80. How did it get
which
to be so expensive?
Because nobody gives a crap what the actual cost are. You think
well,
because you got insurance,
the insurance
that's
company
that's
should care
that's
about
part
that.
Of the
no,
problem,
they,
though.
The insurance companies bill at that rate because then the doctors give them a benefit. It's a whole system of cycling.
Right.
Oh, no,
so
it is. It's
the problem is it's within the insurance companies.
And
but
the hospitals
it's very difficult,
and everyone else.
It's very difficult to crack down on that when they're putting so much money into campaigns, which goes back to the reason why I think we need campaign finance reform and the elimination of big money
but
from
yeah,
politics.
Like where it's $25 for a Tylenol because it's at the hospital and everything
right.
has to be dispensed through the hospital and you can't do anything else.
Does
but
Canada get pharmaceuticals correct? The price of pharmaceuticals and how available they are? Just on that aspect.
Well, it's subsidized, and also it's again, it's a smaller competitive market, so they don't have the same number of people in the competitive world.
Well,
so
you would think that because the United States has so many people
right.
that we would be really competitive and our prices would be cheaper than
yes,
yours.
Yes, and
because,
they should be easily
right. But because
fixed.
There was a law passed that the federal government cannot, on behalf of Medicare, negotiate with the pharmaceutical companies to lower rates, ours yes. is more expensive.
Well, and there's lots of stuff they can do to help bring that down so there is a competitive marketplace. Well, but you have to accept the fact that the only real medical research that's doing anything to save people is coming from the U.S. The United States is what makes everybody healthier because
and the government
the
subsidizes that academic research.
Money. Yes.
Well,
but
and
also,
then pharmaceutical companies come in, they take advantage of that academic research,
oh,
and then they go off and
bit.
Make profit. A little
Listen,
bit.
Listen, at the end of the day, the company that invested huge. Millions and mm-hmm. billions of dollars to make Lipitor has saved millions of lives. And at the end of the day, they deserve to profit on it.
But except
so you've got to come up with a system that allows that competitive world to flourish. But is
our
reasonable.
Taxpayer dollars, not yours, our taxpayer dollars went into some of that research.
Wait, you pay taxes.
Oh, I pay taxes.
He
right.
pays a lot of taxes.
I don't get
so,
to vote, but I get to pay taxes.
But someone much smarter than me is my friend Jonathan Honig. He's a political analyst for Fox Business. He's made more money than I'll ever even see in a movie. But he was just saying that you know having government-mandated health care is sort of like having, to think of it in a more simple term, it's like having government-mandated cell phone plans. You know,
why isn't it not like government-mandated car insurance?
Well, I have that. We have that in Canada too, and it is an absolute disaster.
We have mandatory,
but I'm saying you're
car
mandatory to have
here.
Car insurance.
But the government isn't involved in giving the insurance.
In Canada, is it a federal like
it's
a national?
It's one place.
Because yeah, here in the United right. States, I mean, you have companies that don't do business in
How
New Jersey.
How much does your car insurance
so
cost a month?
Thousands of dollars more than here.
A month?
Oh, a month. It's let's say $600-$700
more.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's unbelievably expensive and. There's no option. You have to go through ICBC or whatever, which is like really painful because whatever rules
so
they
you
set,
pay,
you have to do.
So if I pay $150 a month about, yeah. you're telling me that you pay $750 a month.
For the well, I would do it on two cars, but I know that my brother is $450 a month for his car.
What kind of car is this?
Well, it's just some old Lexus.
Yeah. So I mean, mm-hmm. but it's all right. The point of the fact of the matter is it's more. And when you have, I don't know, I feel like the idea of having
car
it be
insurance
a competitive,
seems to work pretty well here.
Yeah, I was going to say, having competitive health insurance
Unless
companies.
Unless you get into an accident, depending on the company that you have,
right.
things can get a
well,
little
bit that,
that's
why that's why you take
saying.
That
the
into consideration.
The government can't magically fix that. It's just, that's just the problem
well,
when you have
nothing
this
can
many
be magically
notes.
Fixed because
fixed.
I don't believe in magic.
No,
but things can be legislatively fixed.
You can
as
make
soon as you
changes.
Legislate it, it ruins it more. Usually what happens. In pretty well every
so,
industry, the more
very,
you try to chase.
So it's very clear. Libertarian. So.
I wish there was a libertarian option. There really isn't.
That's a big topic.
That was my point.
You're a libertarian.
Sort of helps work in a plug for Brandt's podcast, yeah. Why I'm Not, mm-hmm. the first episode, Why I'm Not a Politician. You asked Ben Shapiro, Dennis Kucinich, and Jack Berkman. Libertarian, it's a concept.
It's a nice
but it's
term.
Not really a thing.
It doesn't really, yeah,
there,
it doesn't
there
really
are
exist.
People who, of course, register. There are candidates yeah. for it, but it's
the
no
Koch
real
The Koch brothers
force.
Claim to be a libertarian.
But there's no force.
Do you believe?
No, there isn't.
Are you...
But they, no, I'm saying there isn't a libertarian official, but there's a general of
yeah,
people
the Koch
that believe
brothers are
things.
Presidents of the
That's
libertarian
what I mean. Like,
movement.
So it's not really like, yeah. like I am very, very, well, first of all, I'm wildly pro-American, American system and free enterprise and capitalism. I am super anti-socialism. I lived and grew up in a socialist basic country, which is the way Canada is. And so, but I'm wildly socially liberal. And so there's no place for me.
Well, that's sort of libertarian in
well,
a way.
It is libertarian,
no,
but
it is in the sense that they're socially liberal and then they're also conservative or fiscally conservative.
They're really not.
But yeah, that's but like, I mean, in general, that's the closest thing
that's
to
like,
anything else.
You know, that's like being part of a, you know, that, I don't know, that's like being a Tampa Bay Rays fan, you know? It's yeah. like, sure, they exist, but what do they do? They can't even fill up their own stadium.
And I also didn't grow up in the two-party system mm-hmm. where it's like everything in your world is built on Republicans or Democrats. Right. I look at both of those parties and I go like, why do you guys like either of them? And
well,
America has turned into a one-issue vote, which I find really strange, is that you get one issue that you're passionate about and you just have to accept the entire party line. And it's like, that's been hard for me to accept and understand.
Yeah, don't like it either. And yeah. part of the reason for it is the big money that's needed to right. run campaigns.
Well, what Jack had said was they legislate it so that there really is only the possibility right. of two parties.
But we were warned against them. George Washington said, yeah. don't do it.
Yeah.
Yep. And that's why I'm not, whyimnot.com. So that's why I'm not a politician. And yeah. also up is why I'm, what is it, why I'm not a good parent?
Why I'm not a good parent.
Mm-hmm. And also
because you're a great one?
Not well, necessarily true.
Yeah, not necessarily true. I'm a great dad. I don't know that I'm a great parent.
Yeah.
Because I'm not instilling the same sort of, I'll say, hardships and lessons that my dad taught me at a young age. You know, my dad didn't wake up every day trying to make me happy. And I seem to spend every day trying to make my kids happy. And so it's great. They're wonderful kids and they're going to be well-rounded people. But is that the best for them as adults and growing up? And what's the cost of that?
In a future episode, which is... Well, no, is that the one with... That's the one with the guy, the college counselors.
Yes,
that
I had the guys.
So that's like, yeah, your kids are happy, but... Because they're happy, they're probably not necessarily going to get into Harvard.
There's 100% right? they're not going to get
so
Ivy League.
So happy people cannot be ambitious? Is this what
well,
they're
Well, you can, but you can be driven.
You can get lucky as a parent and be like my parenting style, which is, you know, warm and cuddly and nice and wonderful and supportive
does
and all those
things. Does nurturing help make – I mean –
yeah. But to
but
get
coddling
it – But for the
not.
Most part
– No, there's a line. Yeah, exactly. Coddling
for,
is one
for
thing.
For most part,
nurturing.
Unless you push your kids borderline relentlessly against their sort of wants – you're not going to put them into Harvard. You're not going to put them in Ivy League. In, again, unless you have parents that went there or some other sort of factor, or you happen to have a genius that just figures it out. But like my 16-year-old, it's impossible for him to get into Ivy League
well,
because
I
didn't push him hard enough.
And
I didn't
there was somebody
make him
who
do more stuff.
Specializes in helping parents, you know, have yeah. plans for these. And at this point, it's too late for him.
She's like,
now you have
late.
A how old is your youngest?
11.
So there's still hope for the 11-year-old. You might
there
be able
is,
to,
but I'm already.
You're not already. You're
right.
not the
and
dad.
And my
to
question
do it.
In the podcast was, am I costing my kids this opportunity? My kids will never play professional sports. My kids will never be in the Harvard.
You know, I'd be
Ivy
really
League.
Interested yeah, to but... know what the happiness studies are of Ivy League graduates.
And that is the. And by the way. And again, what I say in the podcast, it's a wonderful sort of make myself feel better because I would love to use that study. But the truth is that parents today, I think, are selfish. I'm a selfish parent. I do things with my kids because I really like the relationship I have with them. Mm-hmm. I like being a good parent and I like doing that. My parents were not as selfish. They were more concerned with building the elements for real life than I am.
Well, sometimes parents might seem less selfish because they're pushing their kids to motivate them to do big, great things. But their reason for it is because they selfishly get to have a child that's deemed a genius
right, or
that gets
that they
into Harvard.
By the way,
yeah,
that they didn't have.
There's
they
extremes
want their,
on all
yeah,
sides.
Yeah, exactly, because
yes.
they want their kids to have it because they didn't have it or
but they're willing,
they want to live vicariously through
they're
their
willing
kids.
To, and we had the author of Beyond the Tiger Moms, who was a woman who wrote about Asian right. parenting yeah. style versus sort of Western parenting style. And, you know, they do very well, and the Asian community does really well in education because, as a culture, they push really hard, and they don't mind having kids that don't enjoy their weekends or don't have free time at night or don't have a wonderful
school on Saturday. That's right. So yeah,
and they don't have the same relationship that they do. They're not buddies. They're not like they're not worried about what my kid thinks of me or do they want do they like me or you know like my kid's biggest disappointment in sort of life is if the Wi-Fi goes down, and that's kind of the reality of most of the parents I know in a lot of our society right now is like. I had lots of disappointments growing up. My parents said no to everything.
I can think of a lot of adults that I know, probably many of them in this building, that that's the worst part of their day.
Yeah, exactly. That's a very first world problem today.
And so later this week, there'll be Why I'm Not a Reality Star.
Yes.
You can sit down with Heidi and Spencer, who just announced that they've got a little Spidey on the way.
Yeah, we talked a little, we talked a little bit about, about what they would be like and what their kid was in for. Yeah. It was just...
And some of the other ones coming up, Why I'm Not a WWE Superstar, Why I'm Not on YouTube, and there's a bunch more. Why I'm Not High, which was another fun one. And my pal Raxi Schreier is your co-host on the show. So you can check that out. Whyimnot.com. It's on iTunes, all those good places.
Yeah.
Well, we are out of time now, but Brant Pinvidic, thank you so much for sitting on the couch.
I could do this all day.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to do 10 more hours right after we take a break, so let's do that. But for Scott Moore at S-Man80, Chelsea Galicia at Chelsea Galicia, I'm Christian Blatt at Christian DMZ. Thanks so much, everybody. We'll see you back here next Tuesday at 10 Eastern, 7 Pacific. Good night, everyone.
Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.